I keep coming back to this word principle. It was the genesis for the book I wrote, Fullness of Joy, because there was a statement that Joel made about gaining the consciousness of a principle. And this is, I think, the way as students that we enhance our experience of in the now. We, you know, our perspective is constantly shifting, and we have to be aware that in life we aren't always at one place all the time. We move on a scale of perception. And the more that we develop our spiritual awareness, that scale doesn't swing so far down into the gross material. It probably stays more on a higher range. But we're still always shifting on a scale. And we have to understand that we're living between two worlds. We're not, our goal is not to change the appearance world, though paradoxically, which is one of the aspects of mystical living, is the paradox. Paradoxically, we do change the appearance world just by our being in a certain state of consciousness that eliminates activities that take place on the purely mental and physical. But it's not that we're out there trying to change the world. We're in healing. That is one of the main, I think, stumbling blocks for people that are working with healings, is that they have a strong desire to change the appearance. If they're sick, they want to get well. If they have a disease, they want to get rid of the disease. And lots of times they've gone through all of the material processes and diagnoses, and they've found that, you know, the doctors in the material world says, you know, sorry, you know, you're going to die. And people don't want to accept that, so that they come and they search for all these other areas. And if they come into a mystical message, and I think in Christian Science back in the day, and I think even with Joel, many, many people were drawn into this message because of healing and because of problems involving health. But, and it's very difficult to say, okay, I'm going to go into meditation, I'm doing this spiritual work, but I really don't care if there's any results. It's like saying, I don't care if I die or not. I don't care if I suffer. Now, that is a very, you know, that's a difficult place to be in mentally. So how do we, you know, how do we bridge that gap in our work? Well, there's a point where you start, you know, with this experience of oneness, that you start detaching and withdrawing power from this world. When Joel got the whole reason for the Infinite Way message, really can go back to this question of Joel's, is that people would ask him to pray for them, and they would get healed, and he didn't know how, and he didn't know why. And it was a mystery to him that this would take place. What is it? There's got to be a reason. He was too much of a pragmatic person to just say, oh, well, I've been given the gift and I'll just go out and, you know, perform and lay hands on people and then I'll be healed. I mean, that could have happened, but he wanted to know why. I mean, there have been healers throughout history. There have been people that always had this ability to heal. Many of them took advantage of it. They marketed it. They could make a whole, they could get rich on it. Many of them, it was a burden. They didn't know why that in their presence or when somebody would ask them to pray that they would come back and say, gee, you know, that condition is totally gone. And the person that had supposedly done the healing scratched his head and said, I didn't do anything. What is it? And that was Joel's question. I didn't do anything. The idea that healing is an action that, oh, you're going to call a practitioner and they're going to do something for you is a misnomer, because there is nothing that can be done. All already is. One of the principles, kind of the third principle on my list, is the principle of completeness. This creation, this is complete. God created it, and it exists in the now moment, and it exists complete. Nothing to add, nothing to subtract. And you go into the astrophysicist trying to discover the nature of the universe, what it is. They're saying, well, it's complete. Every atom that was here in the beginning at the Big Bang, supposedly, is existing right now. And it all just gets rearranged, but the substance of the universe, I remember one, I liked his statement, one astrophysicist, you know, we're all made out of stardust. We all have the same composition as the whole universe. That is our, if you go into DNA or you want to go, it gets refined and refined and refined. But there has, nothing has been added to the universe since its creation. Everything that has changed is just a rearranging of what already is. So if nothing can be added, then we are not out there seeking to do anything. Now, if we're saying, well, we can rearrange things, if that's the nature of mental healing, well, these atoms or these molecules are out of alignment, or this bacteria or these cells or whatever it is, you can try and mentally manipulate them. And since matter is subject unto mind, really matter is a product of mind, then through your mind you can affect a physical change. But it isn't transformative. It isn't bringing you out of a certain way of looking. You're not seeing the unseen or hearing the inaudible. You're just playing around with the mental concepts and rearranging the blocks on the floor. You haven't really changed the dynamic of coming into a realization of the mystic, of what really is. Because the mystic oneness takes away all of the negative sense of arrangement, for lack of a better word. So the idea then that we cannot do anything to affect a change spiritually is an important idea to grasp. Because why? What is, and this is basically what, and Joel went through, and maybe we have to go through these stages too. Joel went through all these stages. And the story is that when Joel was a young man, and his father was supposedly died in England. Somebody in England, his father was a merchant, importer, and Joel followed in his father's business. And when they got the telegram, this was, I can't remember the time, around World War I, and maybe it was the early 20s or just before the First World War. They got a telegram saying, your father is dying, please come and pick up the body. When Joel left New York and sailed to England, by the time he got to England, he found his father well. During that time, some one of his father's clients said, well, you know, the doctors aren't doing anything for you. Why don't you call a Christian Science practitioner? And so this was very early in Christian Science. Mrs. Eddy didn't die until 1910. So there were people that had direct contact with what Mrs. Eddy experienced, and that was her quest. She was healed. She had a very sickly growing up. Her sisters and her family didn't expect her to live more than, you know, in her 20s because she had such a frail constitution and was always sick. And her epiphany came when, and I don't remember her age exactly, but I think she'd been married and they were, was living in New Hampshire, and she slipped on the ice, and they took her to the hospital. She had all of these problems and they didn't expect her to survive. And her idea was that here I was praying. I was in a consciousness. I had been searching and searching for what was the truth. Why, you know, what was the reality of existence? Was, well, I'll regress to a little, an earlier point in her life. She grew up in a very Calvinistic family that believed in predestination. Her father was very strong. You either were born to go to heaven or you were born to go to hell, and it didn't matter what you did in this life. That was your destiny. And she just said, you mean if I am a loving person, if I repent and I, you know, really do good, if I'm predestined to go to hell, I'm going to go to hell? And her father said, yep. And that she could not bear that concept, that idea, that we're either born to live beautiful, happy lives, or we're born to suffer. She couldn't accept that that was that a God would do that. And her search was to find the antidote, you might say, to that concept that God has prejudged you and you're doomed to whatever your fate is. And in her studies, it brought her to the point where she was understood that this was a concept, that this really wasn't God. And it brought her to the point where if God is love, if this is a loving God, then everything exists in love and there is no suffering and there cannot be this predestined sense of eternal damnation. When she was in the hospital, her whole body, everything was healed. She came out of that accident completely healed and with a new consciousness. Because, now this is a supposition, but if you're basically unable to really, if you're in a coma, I don't know if she was in a coma, but if you have developed a spiritual sense, you've put yourself on that path and you've put your attention to trying to discover what is the truth about the spiritual aspect of life, the spiritual nature of life. When you are completely incapacitated mentally and physically, that spirit fills you because you have opened yourself to that. You have, there's no resistance. There's no what ifs or but. It takes place. And when that takes place, that's a transformation. And we all have that. That's part of our evolution in the discovery of our true nature. And when we do take that step, we see that it isn't what we do that affects our life. It's what we are. It's our beingness. It's our being in the presence. It's our being in this consciousness. Being centered, being in oneness with God, led us to the statement of Joel, which is to me the definitive healing statement. In my conscious realization of the presence of God, there is nothing but God. No evil can exist. But it takes that conscious realization. We build then, what this book is about, is building this greater realization of this one consciousness, so that when problems come, we are not immediately drawn into finding a solution to the problem. Even Einstein knew this. I mean, mystics, all these great people, no matter what their field or no matter what their beliefs were in other areas, realize that you do not solve a problem on the level that brought you the problem. So if you're trying to cure a disease through the same mechanism and the same beliefs that the disease exists in, then you're really not going to cure the disease. You might move it around, it might go away for a while, but you're in that same consciousness, and so that belief that there is disease, it might be one disease 1 year and it's all gone, and then the next year another disease comes. Why? What's going on? Well, you haven't stepped out of that consciousness that gives power to material cause and effect. So with Joel, when he arrived in England and his father was healed, they went back to New York together, and it made Joel really curious. Why? How did this happen? I was going prepared to bring back a corpse, and here I'm sailed home with my father. So there is a spark, whatever the spark is, that drove Joel into wanting to know why. And most of our, even our human endeavors, we want to know why. Why did this happen? Now, if we keep that why on the plane of cause and effect, we're going to be looking for the cause to a particular effect. But when the why is about how come this, you know, was a death sentence, wasn't, how could that be? And eventually that led Joel into Christian Science. And he had been contemplating this. Whatever that brought that healing consciousness to Joel, from what I remember of being told these stories, he was still in the business world before he went into Christian Science, but his business was failing and more people were calling him for healings to pray for them. And his colleague said, you know, you're in the wrong business. You have people, you know, that ask, you have more people asking you to pray for you than you have customers. So that drove him into this other way of life. And it was a great training, that being a Christian Science practitioner for 35 years, you really started developing an understanding, what is the relationship between mind, body, and spirit? And often we are led into a spiritual way of life through adversity. I mean, it sounds, oh, you know, you have more people calling you for healing than customers. Well, when you have a business failing, when you're going broke, when you have obligations and you have family, that's not a pleasant experience. And when you can't figure out what to do and you try using all of your metaphysical training to make your business better, trying to change an outer appearance, and it's not getting better, there's a point where you step back and say, okay, I just better stop and see what's happening. And these are always, these revelations often come in times of adversity. In the Christian Science practice, the being a practitioner, in a sense, that's a business. And there was the Christian Science practitioners charged for their treatment work. And they had offices. And it was structured almost kind of like a therapist or therapy. And when Joel set up his office, what to charge, how to make money at this, he needed to make money, he needed to make a living. And it came to me, saw different practitioners. And I think it was on a tape that we heard recently, he was going in a practitioner's office or wanting to set up his office somewhere in Boston, and the other practitioner says, well, don't do it here. There's nobody here. You're not going to make any money. You shouldn't be here. I can't remember the whole story. And he thought, well, that's not what, that's not principled. that's not truth. If the truth is that if you are in this consciousness, this spiritual consciousness, if you are living and moving and having your being in God, then your supply is not dependent on anything out there. It's not dependent on clients. It's not dependent on patients. It's not dependent on students. It's not dependent on anything out there. When you have the realization that my fulfillment and all that comes with it, my, supporting a family, is in consciousness, then it shifts your perspective. Same thing as taking and having the realization when you see a sunset that it's not out there. Oh, this is taking place in consciousness. What does that do? It brings you back into the universal, infinite nature of this spiritual dimension. And the practice is constantly then withdrawing from solutions in the outer and going into the inner where there are no solutions. There is just consciousness. And in consciousness then, through your own activity, comes the direction and comes the activity that you pursue. So Joel's practice thrived in Christian Science because, as he said, he had no patients. There was nobody to heal. Most of the Christian Scientists looked to their patients, and they looked to their patients to heal them, and they were going to practice the principles of Christian Science, the metaphysical principles, to heal. But Joel realized that he had better healings when he didn't give people a treatment. Why? That's counterintuitive. I should really be praying and really doing the work, and then people will be healed. Or he would be praying and doing the work for one problem that someone came to him with to solve, but something else was healed that he didn't even know about. So how could that be? So these kind of questions were revealed through Joel's work, and we've been given this great legacy. And if we have the ability, we can go straight to that mystical spiritual healing without going through the metaphysical steps. But we have to be so assured and so grounded in our experience of the divine presence that we can't get thrown off by mental appearances. So Joel included the metaphysics in his teaching. But it's not the metaphysics that does the healing. It's the consciousness. It's developing the consciousness of the individual, their spiritual consciousness, that does the healing. Because they don't do the healing. They get out of the way. The principle being is that if I am completely one in God, experiencing that presence, it comes only in the here and now. So there's, what does that do? If it's in the here and now, there's no person out there to be healed. There's no process in this. If we're only one, there's no God and a person and a problem. There is only the one. When you come into that oneness, you are in a state of spiritual being. And that state of spiritual being comes with a feeling, with a presence. You become aware of this presence. This presence is always with you. You feel it more when you put your attention to it. But if you've developed this awareness of this spiritual presence and live through it, you live what appears to be a normal life. You're doing all the normal things that people do in life. You have your social life, you have your work life, you have your family life. But all of that takes place in consciousness. Now, you might not, your family might not be part of, you know, be with you in this journey, but it doesn't exclude them from being in your consciousness. Therefore, they benefit from your non-judgmental attitude. They benefit from your not pinning any conditions, beliefs on them. They benefit by your recognizing their spiritual nature. They benefit by the love that you exude. And it isn't your love, it isn't a personal love. It is the unconditional love of this presence of God. And it doesn't come with, it doesn't come by putting anything, putting something out. It comes just by your being. What was, who was it? Whitman? Say, or who you are speaks so loudly. I can't remember that phrase. But your beingness speaks so strongly to this presence, to this consciousness, that those within your consciousness are participating, even if they're not knowing it, even if they're not doing it willingly, even if they come and say, I don't believe what you believe, I think it's a bunch of hooey, then it doesn't matter. You are there. When Jesus said, love your enemies, what was he talking about? Wasn't talking about some foreign army. He was talking about this state of consciousness that says, I don't believe you. I think there's only the matter and its material cause and effect that is all that exists. Now, as Paul tried to put it, and Joel corrected this error, evil is enmity against God, but it isn't. It doesn't exist in God. It appears to be the counterpoint of truth. But if you go into that and try and fight it and try and get rid of it, you're leaving that consciousness of oneness and you're going into this world and you're battling in this world and you have to give up the sword and give up the battle. As Joel says in the Wisdoms, when the battle is raging, the initiate remains as calm as possible, retreating into that consciousness where you can see it going on out there, but you consciously withdraw and maintain that spiritual presence as much as possible. Whether that battle is going on within your own body or if it's going on within your family or your business or your community. We maintain this perception then that allows us to be untouched by the appearance world. And what does this do? This really takes away fear. The basis of all fear is this personal sense of self. Fear is grounded in our not wanting to suffer and not wanting to die. And not, well, suffering as being poor, I guess. I mean, you can, suffering is a big word. When you realize that that ceases to exist in this spiritual consciousness, the fear leaves, and you are able to move in this world without that constraint of withholding. Everything goes out. Because what is going out is coming from this infinite source. It appears that there's a flow. It appears that there is all this movement. But in reality, it is just the harmony of being. When you think of harmony, what really is harmony? In music, harmony is this sound that elevates one out of into peace, brings one into a higher state of consciousness. How is that harmony instigated? It's through movement. If it's a guitar or violin, it's the vibration of the strings. If it's a horn, it's the vibration of the air going through the tubes that comes out. If it's a percussion, the bells, it's that striking a bell sends a vibration. That vibration, when it's in harmony, becomes a one, becomes an activity, an experience in the now. But that experience seems to emanate from all this movement. So it seems that we have all this movement going on, but when you think of the now, you're thinking, well, now I'm not going anywhere, no past or present, no time or space. Where am I moving to? But this movement is an activity in consciousness, and it is establishing harmony as the environment in which we live. So when we say, and Joel says, that in the realized presence of God, there is no disease, that is experienced, or the result, what you see, is that the physical appearances disappear. They're just gone, because they had no basis in truth to begin with. So what appears to be a movement, what appears to be a change, what appears to be a healing, is in reality an establishment of the real that has never changed. You see that? It's kind of I see how this is how this works, and to put it into words, because we're so used to movement. We don't want to be sedentary, and it doesn't look like the universe is sedentary at all. Everything is moving at tremendous speed, spinning and twirling around. But at the same time, it is all now, and it is all in this presence. And there's nothing that is changing. All there is this activity of harmony, this activity of being is an active verb. So we have this is one of the other paradoxes of mystical living, is that it is in this state of beingness, in this state of nowness, in this presence, not going into the past or the future, that we experience this tremendous movement, this which is harmony, this tremendous peace, which transforms not anything out there. All it is doing, it is bringing into harmony, bringing into alignment that which already is. So maybe this analogy, you're playing an instrument, a guitar, and you've been playing it for a while, and you've made beautiful music, and it's in the now, and it's bringing harmony and peace, but one of your strings goes out of tune. What do? You tighten it a little, or loosen it a little, depending on how it's gone out of tune. Suddenly, harmony has come back. And that activity of tuning, of bringing back into harmony, is what healing is. String hasn't changed. The guitar hasn't changed. The place of the string hasn't changed. But it's just come back into harmony. what brings it back into harmony? Consciousness. That ear that can hear the inaudible. That vision that sees the invisible. It says we want to exist in harmony, and we can establish this harmony by our realization of this presence. There's a story in the Buddhist tradition, and the Buddha wanted to know how to alleviate suffering. And what was it? What could he do? In his story, you remember that he was born in royalty and had all of the luxury and all of the pleasures of life. And he was hidden in his compound from any discord or inharmony. And when on a trip between one of his palaces, he saw beggars, and he didn't know that they existed. And he wondered, well, how could that be? I thought everything was in this beautiful state of harmony, and everybody was living, you know, creating beauty. And when he saw this not beautiful situation, it set him off like, well, if I can experience this harmony and abundance and beauty, why can't everybody? And that became his quest, how to do that. And he began and he thought, well, if I deny myself, it's all about indulgence, the selfish indulgence. So he became an ascetic, and he only ate a few leaves a day, and he didn't wear clothes, and he became emaciated, and he followed these holy men that said this is the way to harmony by completely denying the human sense, completely denying yourself. And after a while, he realized that that didn't work, and he was sitting on a river, and there was a boat floating by with a musician on it, and the musician was tuning his sitar, and the string was it was too high and too tight, and he kept adjusting it, and the Buddha listened and was saying, "Oh, if it's too tight, it doesn't work. If it's too loose, it doesn't work. It has to be this middle path. It has to be where there is no judgment. It's not screeching. It's not flat, but it's right on." So how do we maintain this? So he went and he realized that he was in this state of being way too tense, way too high, that you weren't going to gain illumination through the denying of the body. So when he went and sat under the Bodhi tree, he left the aesthetics and was in the forest, and his whole idea was that if it is all one, if harmony is one, if we can experience this oneness, this middle path, then everyone's life that's participating in this will have that beauty and that abundance and that joy. And sitting under the Bodhi tree, he realized that this was all a matter of perception. It all started in your mind with your perceptions, your beliefs, your judgments. And his quest was to sit under the tree until he was illumined. and in his meditations after hours and hours or days, I don't know, remember the details of the story, but then the god of destruction came to him, throwing at him every negativity that there is. And he realized that without reaction, they had no power. And then that same god turned into the god of blessings. I don't remember their names, but the god of blessing then started presenting him with every beauty on the human level, with food and drink and women and everything that would be satisfying physically. And he realized that that had no power. So it is, and that the good of this conceptual world and the evil of this conceptual world are opposite ends of the same stick. They are the same God. They are the God that says there is power outside of one, says that there is power outside of ourself. There is no power outside of self. That is the omnipotence of oneness. So when we move ourselves into this awareness, dropping the concepts of this world, the beliefs of this world, letting go of the activity of the mind, realizing that the adjustment comes not on the level of the problem. The strings don't loosen or tighten themselves. The adjustment comes in the realization of our oneness with God. Once we have this experience, we can drop all of our effort in trying to change anything on the outer. The change happens not because of what we do, but because of who we are and our state of realization. The body and the mind do not exist separately from consciousness. They are in consciousness. What we do when we enter into this state of being, into this stillness, is that we are including body and mind and bringing them under the jurisdiction of God. In this consciousness, our bodies and minds are totally united in oneness. there's harmony. Thank you.